Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Man, I swallowed a frog the moment we went on the air. Excuse me. I think I'm going to die. It's that time of the year. We've had brutally hot weather, not nearly as bad as the eastern part of the United States, but it's been hot. We're having a little relief tonight, rainfall, and I have to tell all my listeners right now what's going on here in the official Wild World studio. I have I don't know how big this snake is. It's about 9 feet long. It's a Burmese python. And it's in the process at this very moment of shedding its skin, which is pretty cool. So if I stop talking during the show, you'll understand why I'm watching this snake do this. It's a very interesting process. We'll talk about it later. Back is our technical producer on Larry Batson's Wild World, Eric Altman, all the way from the mountains and hills of Pennsylvania. It's great to have Eric back. And, of course, bringing us the Wild World news, Dr. Henry Day. And tonight, folks, the program is going to be a little bit different. Yes, in fact, I was presented this idea, I don't know, we about a month ago, I suppose, and Dr. Day said, why don't I interview you for one of the shows? And I thought, well, this may crash and burn like the Hindenburg, but we'll see what happens. So Dr. Day is going to take over my job a little bit later on, and I'm going to try and tell him the truth if we can, and we'll do that. But as always, from the metropolis known as Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day with our Wild World News. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
The snake is too cool. I'm telling you right now, I'm watching it as we speak. This is a current event going on, by the way. And right now it's trying to break the skin on the very tip of its nose. So
that's always the hardest.
Yeah. All right. So what's in the Wild World news tonight?
Well, I want all the anglers to hold on to the end of the Wild World news. I have some fishing facts for them tonight.
Uh-oh.
So after we get done, be ready.
Oh,
for all you anglers. And an angler is... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
An angler is described in the dictionary as one who fishes for pleasure.
Well, that's probably true. And how appropriate, because one of our underwriters is Bass Pro Shops. So
I hope I can help some of those guys out here tonight.
Well, you just might do that.
Okay, well, let's start out in Salt Lake City. The dispute over a plot of land north of downtown has been resolved by creating a 58-acre nature preserve, which was dedicated Tuesday. Now, don't start laughing already.
Sorry, I can't help.
Although the land was in the city boundary, it belonged to North Salt Lake. The two cities made a deal in 2007 that would allow the North Salt Lake to develop some areas and setting the rest aside for a nature preserve. And we need more of those.
Very cool.
All right, Anchorage, Alaska. The commercial fishing season for Bristol Bay sockeye salmon historically peaks on the 4th of July, but it hasn't arrived yet this year. The State Department of Fish and Game cited cool weather. At Leader Creek Fisheries in Naknek, operations manager Norman Van Vactor says he expects the salmon run will be smaller this year than forecast.
Well, and that's wild, because we're talking global warming, and they say it's too cold for the salmon to run right now. You know, I won't run unless it's 70 degrees, and then you got to really be hoping.
Yeah. And I figured up when I was in the service, I ran over 5,000 miles in combat boots.
Yeah.
I don't run anymore at all.
I
refuse to.
I agree. Now it's your being
okay. Well, let's run off to Bend, Oregon. Now, this is kind of sad, but it's also a thing that it's kind of good, too, to see people getting together. Residents plan to hold a memorial service at Galveston Bridge in Drake Park this evening to mourn the death of 109 Canada geese euthanized last week.
Oh.
It was an effort to help the park district reduce the goose population.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's been a problem. With all the creation of retention ponds and bodies of water, these geese are hanging around. I think we have a million some in Indiana, and you know, in the future, I'm still trying to talk him coming on the show. I think he's afraid, but a good friend of mine is a former Indiana wildlife biologist, and he was part of the program to reintroduce the Canadian geese back into the state of Indiana, along with the wild turkey. Both programs have been very successful. But he doesn't like to talk too much about it. He was the one responsible for starting the geese here. He's afraid.
Yeah, you know, a lot of places, like the golf courses around here, they'll use fireworks.
They'll
use blanks to scare the birds off. And they leave for a little bit and come back. But, you know, I would try that first before doing anything else.
Well, right. Then you have to worry about someone injured by the fireworks trying to scare the geese away.
Yeah.
So, it's a no-win situation.
And it also scares other birds, and, you know, what do you
think?
All right, well, let's run off to Baltimore, Maryland. The Chesapeake Bay Trust announced a new app that is a field guide to the plants and animals of the Bay watershed, complete with a location service that tells users which species are found and where they are standing. Now, that's interesting.
That's
very
interesting. The
free guide is available for iPhones, and the Trust hopes to expand the offerings to other devices. So basically what they're saying is you can go out into the park, stand next to a tree, and you can find out what kind of tree it is.
By using your phone.
By using your phone.
Wow. That's cool. Whatever it takes to get the kids outdoors.
You know, we haven't advanced this far, but I was thinking when we were in high school, a calculator cost $300 to $500, and it was the size of a history book.
Yep.
And all you could do was add with it.
Hey, and I've already sent children in shock before when I told them that we actually had to get up off the sofa and change the television channels by turning a knob, and that there were only four channels that you could watch.
Yeah. And one of them didn't come in very good.
No, one didn't come in very good, which really helped the monster movies and made them look better. But
But
I tell you, the look in the children's face when you tell them that, it's like, oh, my God, how did you ever live through that? I don't know. And it's just like, this probably is not politically correct, but in my neighborhood when I was a kid, if I would have worn a bicycle helmet, I would have got beaten up.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody. Oh, I can't even imagine. Okay. Sorry. Didn't mean to drift away.
All right. Well, let's Belchertown, Massachusetts. Department of Conservation and Recreation has placed a moratorium on commercial logging in the woods surrounding the Quabbin Reservoir, where it conducts a scientific review of the Watershed Forestry Management Program. Officials said 29 commercial logging projects are under contract will be allowed to continue with modifications. So it's good to see that the conservation and recreation people are keeping an eye on everything. You know, it's amazing. I was thinking with all the guests we've had on this show, all the people involved with the fish and wildlife, it's amazing, like you were talking last week, all the different jobs, all the different things that have to be done in a park that you just don't think about.
No, and that's right. And I've always encouraged youngsters, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service, they're actively recruiting kids. I think they start at elementary age. Kids that are interested in the outdoors are good with their studies. Because let's face it, these kids nowadays, they're not going outside. And if you're going to work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which would have to be one of the coolest jobs in the world, you go outside. And these kids need to get attuned with nature, and it's a big challenge for them right now. Big challenge.
Well, you know, it's gotten so bad, the kids not going outside and playing, that they're actually making dirt pills for the children to take so that they get some of their immunities from the bacteria in the soil. They are actually making dirt pills.
Yeah. I may be weird, but when I was a kid, I can't ever recall eating any dirt. Now, my friend Bob Olson, who's now passed away, God rest his soul, his mother still claims she heard him choking outside, and it was because he had a nightcrawler half swallowed when he was just a toddler. So, you know, I'm sure he probably had some dirt. Did you eat dirt when you were a child, Henry, or do you remember?
I don't remember, but you know what it's like, say when you're fishing and you've got a bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
You don't, it doesn't matter. If you're hungry, you'll eat it with dirt on it or whatever.
Well,
that's
true. You know, we went up to Canada one time, and the deal was is that we had to catch fish to eat. And so every meal, and up in Canada, we were way up in the northern stretches of Ontario, Canada, where most of these lakes didn't see very many people a year. So you threw a can opener in there with a hook on it, you'd catch you a pike or something. Of course, up there, they don't like them. They call them slime. But we'd have to eat fish every day, and I'll tell you. Here's my tip for tonight, a camping tip. If you do not want to ruin your camping trip for the next 2 or 3 days, never eat wild-caught fish a little bit undercooked. It's not a good thing. And that's from my own experience. Okay, I didn't know where you were at, Henry. I'm sorry. I apologize. I've just about made this animal news. Go ahead.
Well, that's what we're here for. This is your show tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I got some bad news bears stories.
Uh-oh.
Three in a row. So brace yourself for the bears.
I'm sitting down.
Beattyville, Kentucky. We've talked about this story for the last few weeks. State wildlife authorities are watching an open trash container after a black bear was seen foraging there. Officials hope to capture the bear and determine if it was the animal that attacked a hiker on June 27th. Tim Scott received stitches but is recovering. State biologist Dave Duby said that if the bear appears to be the one that attacked Smith, it will be euthanized. Now, how do you determine that 2 or 3 weeks after an attack?
Interrogate the bear, Henry. You know, you get the light shining on, you get the lights, this interrogation may last for hours. And follow the bear and tell you whether he mauled him or not. And you know what? I've said this on a program. This the month of June is a bad time to be in the woods where bears live because that's the mating season. And the male bears get very aggressive that time of the year. Now, the black bear, and, you know, don't bet your life on this, but normally they're big chickens. And if you make enough noise or commotion or whatever, you think there's a problem, pick up the biggest rock you can see and chuck it his way. They'll usually run with the wind. But in the month of June, my experience is the male bears become quite aggressive, so...
Well, that explains these next two stories.
Okay.
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, man.
A 250-pound black bear sought for dragging a woman from her tent was captured and killed at a picnic area in the mountains east of the city. The male bear, believed to be about 5 years old, was caught in the trap, the state and game fish department said. Yeah.
Well.
And here in, Santa Fe, New Mexico, a 150-pound black bear was killed at Philmont Scout Ranch after it bit a 14-year-old camper. Marty Frenzel of the State Department of Fish and Game said a Philmont employee shot the bear earlier Wednesday after it jumped on a tent and injured the camper. Officials said the scout's injuries included a bite to the hand and a deep scratch on his head. Now,
he'll have a cool scar.
Is there a bear badge that they give for scouts who get mauled by bears?
You know, I'm trying to think. You're absolutely right. You should automatically become an Eagle Scout if that happens.
The
No matter what, yeah. Whatever your rank is, tenderfoot.
The scar should be enough of a badge, I guess.
I'll tell you, the badge they should get is being stupid, because I will bet you, whatever, that there was food items in
there
that tent.
Food in there, yeah.
And also, you have to remember, who camped out there before? And all the bear has to have is the scent of food. And a lot of people that camp out and are messy with their food and don't do the proper bear etiquette, they make the place a mess, then even when they leave, that scent still retains at that campground. So it takes a long time, a couple rains or more. I mean, you're talking about an animal, the nose, the sense of smell. Because bears can't see, their eyesight's very poor. So, and that's a lot of the time responsible for when bears do unordinary things, because they're not sure whom or where's at, because maybe the wind's not blowing the right direction. And the bear makes a beeline, and he beelines in the wrong direction, mows somebody down, and the bear realizes what kind of a situation he's in, and first thing the bear does is use his claws and bites. So one should always be very, very cautious when in bear country. Don't take Fido or Perry or your little dogs, because they're nothing but bear and mountain lion bait. Keep them in your camper. Okay. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, let's run off to Fairbanks, Alaska. A new fish hatcheries operation is facing delays after a glitch in the water filtration system. State officials hope fish will be ready in the hatchery within the next few weeks. Rainbow trout are scheduled for hatching here, will instead be hatched at Anchorage Fort Richardson. So we'll have some little fries out there here before too long.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's go here close to home. You know, we've been reporting on the monarch butterflies here the last few weeks.
That's
well,
right.
Here in Valparaiso, Indiana, they've created a royal retreat. The city's Parks Department is rolling out the proverbial red carpet in anticipation of the welcoming of the butterflies this fall. Valparaiso Parks horticulturist Steve Martinson recently told the park board how the two-acre prairie at Foundation...
Did you say that was Steve Martin's son or Steve Martinson?
Martinson.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they're transforming this two-acre area into a monarch meadow. Every fall, hundreds of millions of the orange and black butterflies migrate from Canada and the United States to Mexico, where they winter before returning north in the spring. Despite their vast numbers, they are still threatened and becoming endangered species because of the loss of their habitat and other factors.
You know, I was with... Go ahead.
Doing something locally here for the butterflies. That's nice.
That's very cool. In fact, I was with one of the foremost butterfly experts in North America. Bob Pyle's written several subjects on it when I was in the NCTC, National Conservation Training Center, in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And, boy, he's got it bad, boy. He doesn't go anywhere without a butterfly net, and he's pretty something. Yeah, he's written 14 books. We're going to have him on the show. As soon as
cool.
We can figure out a time. Yeah, he's from Oregon, so I've already hit him up, and he said he'd be more than happy to do it. Well, I think we're going to be looking in August or September, but Bob Pyle, he's also written a couple interesting books. He wrote one about his adventures in the Cascade called Walking with Bigfoot, so we'll talk about that too. Sorry.
Butterflies and Bigfoot, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
From one end to the other.
That's
well,
right.
Speaking of butterflies, I saw my first hummingbird moth last night.
Well,
quite an exciting adventure. And if you've never seen a hummingbird moth before, you'll have to look at a picture of a hummingbird moth. Quite an interesting creature. Their wings are almost transparent. And when they're beating, you can hardly see them. And they have this long proboscis. It's just that you have to look up the hummingbird moth. And hopefully you get to see one in the wild, because they're pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I saw one a couple years ago here. Looks like a little hummingbird.
Yeah, it does. A little tiny hummingbird.
Yep.
Oh, and also here locally, you'll be happy to know that my goldfish have bred, and I Rescued a bunch of baby goldfish from the pond today, and they're inside in a 50-gallon aquarium doing fine.
Wow. Well, congratulations. How many have you rescued
so far?
I know that's one of your projects. How many did you rescue?
Six right now. I'm sure there were more, but, you know, I didn't get there in enough time.
Yeah, probably. Oh, well.
Okay, well, that's the animal news for the night, but I do have...
Oh, no, it's not. There's more. I'm contributing tonight.
All right, well, let's have it.
The Dublin Zoo is relieved over the return of a stolen penguin. Dublin, Ireland, we're talking now. Kelly the penguin's back home at the Dublin Zoo after pranksters. Little snot-nosed brat snatched the bird and abandoned her on a city sidewalk. Man. Dublin Zoo condemned Thursday's theft as no joke. Absolutely. Because the 10-year-old Humboldt penguin could have been injured during her abduction or, worse yet, crushed by a vehicle. Now, luckily, the Humboldt penguin's not the big one. Now, if they would have tried to abduct a king's penguin, oh my, that would have been a whole different story. They're a pretty big bird. Zoo officials said people tracked down Kelly using a signal from a microchip planted on the bird. Now, that's smart. She got the medical all clear and was returned to her penguin partner, Mick. Oh, well. Sounds like a romantic couple. Mick and Kelly, the Humboldt penguins. Police said the thieves climbed over a security fence onto an enclosure housing about a dozen Humboldt penguins and picked Kelly for reasons unknown. Well, it's probably the easiest one to catch. that's the animal news for tonight. That was kind of fun, Henry.
That's a good story.
I saw that tonight.
Now, you know, due to the penguins' environment and stuff, the dust-free environment for those little guys, I'm glad to hear that Kelly's okay.
Yeah, Kelly's all right. And I said, she had called 911 or something. Of course, Larry Batson's Wild World is made possible by our underwriters, such as We Want You Cottages way up in western New York. Lake Chautauqua, go up there and see Patty or Kathy Weimer at We Want You Cottages. They also have this exciting website called iKids Fishing, where youngsters can download their picture of the big whopper that they caught and compare it with youngsters all across the country. And you can get to that website at www.wewanchu.com, wewantyou.com, or call them, 716-789-3383. They've got a spectacular resort, so if you're thinking about getting away for a few days, go up there and see the Weimers. The Weimers, he gets so mad when I call him that. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. If you've never been out west and you're thinking about going to the Rockies, man, Rocky Mountain National Park is spectacular. And McGregor Mountain Lodge is right on the border of it. I mean, animals from the park will go on the property at McGregor's. I've seen bighorn sheep, elk, it's just, and mule deer, too cool. Stayed there many, many times. So you want to go to info@McGregorMountainLodge.com or call the 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. And a big thank you to Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Marine Boating Center way down in Clarksville, Indiana. Dan White's the guy you want to talk to. Here's his number, 812-218-5369. If you're thinking about a boat, go down and see him. Could give you a good deal. And also, if you've never been to the Bass Pro Shops, it's perfect. Dad can check out the latest hunting gear, fishing gear, mom, kids. They can go look at the mounted animals from around the world and also this massive aquarium that they have on display. I mean, you walk into the aquarium, essentially, and you see all the native fish. So that's at the Bass Pro Shop in Clarksville, Indiana, very close to Louisville, and that number is 812-218-5369. And Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes. Folks, they cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. It's known for world-class fishing. It holds 7 state records and 1 world record, which I'm pretty sure is for blue catfish. I'm thinking that thing weighed about 150 pounds. It's huge. Here's their website, www.santeecoopercountry.org, or call the girls at 1-800-227-8510. They'll set up your fishing trips, your golf trips, where to stay. So make sure you have a good time in South Carolina. And also, I neglected to say that the Animal Wild World News is underwritten by Jet Kaiser Films. If you're producing a documentary for your company, corporation, jetkaiser.com, that's where you want to go. He's willing to travel around the world, and he is an artist. He's a producer of fantastic documentaries and other films, so jetkaiser.com, we thank them very much. Tonight's a little bit different, folks. Dr. Henry Day, who I've known for, oh my God, long time.
Long time.
Yeah, he, 3 or 4 weeks ago, suggested that maybe for a show that he would interview me. And at first I said, there is no way that's ever going to happen. And we had a plan last week, but I was quick enough to find a guest. So we wouldn't have to do this, but I've decided it's going to be a blast. And Doctor, it's your show, brother, there, and I have no idea what he's going to ask or say or do.
And that's the way we wanted it.
Oh, well, let's also give the number if people want to call in. We'll chat with them. 347-855-8123, 347-855-8123. Good evening, Doctor.
Okay, before we get into the amazing life of Larry Batson, I forgot to give the fish information, which is going to be very important tonight.
Okay.
We'll do the fish. And according to the Old Farmer's Almanac, the next 2 weeks are going to be the best fishing days this month. Now, the best times to fish are when the fish are naturally most active. The sun, moon, the tides, and weather all influence fish activity. For example, fish tend to feed more at sunrise and sunset. During a full moon, tides are higher than average, and the fish tend to feed more. However, most of us go fishing when we can get time off, not because it's the best time to fish.
That's right.
But here's just a little more information. During the morning rise, after sunup for a spell, and the evening rise, just before sundown, and an hour or so after, when the barometer is on a steady rise, it's good fishing. During a thunderstorm, fish aren't going to give up feeding, so keep on fishing. You just got to find the right bait. Now, when there's a hatch of flies, right, something to be concerned about. Now, when the flies and the mayflies are hatching, it's a good time to match whatever flies are hatching out.
Yeah.
Now, when there's a breeze from the west, it's good, but it's from the north or east, fishing is probably not going to be as well. When the water is still or rippled rather than during a strong wind is the best times to fish. So get out there and fish, all right?
Did you just make all that up?
Next 2 weeks, best fishing in the month. Okay. All right, well, let's get along with this interview here.
Remember, we only got a couple minutes until we go to the PSAs. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, what is your name, Batson? What's the ornate original, what's the ornate, the, help me out here,
the ancestry?
Batson, yes, what's Batson?
Well, it's a screwed up thing, Henry. It's a combination of everybody. In fact, I found out that in my bloodlines is the French ruler. God, what was his name? It'll come to me after the show's over. But he was the one that was noted for decapitating the citizens of the city when it was over. But also, he ate himself to his own demise, and he would eat incredible amounts of food every day. And I can't think of his name. In fact, when God love my Aunt Laura had our family tree, and one time I took all that out and looked at it. I saw that name, and I looked it up, and my God. But I don't know. I've got Mexican ancestry, Italian, Roman, Eagledale.
Eagledale.
The milkman. I don't know. Where it originates, I couldn't tell you. I think it might be German somewhere. And they've changed the spelling a couple times. You know, people that try to find out stuff about me. It's two T's, Batson. And I think originally some of my ancestors dropped one of the T's, so it's not confusing for folks, but I like to keep people confused, so. Okay. Henry?
Yeah.
done.
Well,
I have no more to say.
All right, show's over.
I think it was over at 9:05, but I wasn't going to say anything. Go ahead.
Well, let's go ahead and do the public service announcements, and we'll come back fresh.
All right, we're going to take off for a few moments. This is Larry Batson, and this is Larry Batson's Wild World on Magnificent Worldwide Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Louie.
Hey, everybody, we're here. Good to see you. When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat, heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow.
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson, and I have to tell you the latest progress. For the folks that weren't listening at the start of the program, Doctor, the python has gotten about a third of its skin. It's crawling literally out of its skin as we speak. It's incredible. I've seen it thousands of times. It still always amazes me. Almost now, I kind of wish we had a video thing going on during our show. Well, then again, no, I don't want to do that. That was a bad idea.
There are a lot of people who don't like snakes who are crawling out of their skin tonight.
Probably. We want to remind everybody, our underwriters that keep Larry Batson's Wild World on the air, they sponsor us, make it possible for us to do this show. We want you cottages way up in western New York at Lake Chautauqua, or Chautauqua Lake. I screw that up every time. Peter and Kathy Weimer, they're the proprietors. And, hey, and if you've got a vacation time coming up and you want to head up to Western, oh, it's fabulous. And muskie fishing just started last week. So they catch lots of fish up there. It's beautiful water. Oh, and the smell in the air, the pine trees. That's We Want You Cottages. Their website's www.wewantchu.com. Or call them up, 716-789-3383. Or the fantastic, marvelous, beautiful McGregor Mountain Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado. And if you're thinking about going out west, going to Colorado, visiting Rocky Mountain National Park, one of the most spectacular places in all of North America, there's where you need to stay. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com, or give them a call at 1-800-835-8439. And once again, we thank Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Marine Boating Center down in Clarksville, Indiana. Give Dan White a call if you want to buy a new boat. And hey, any Bass Pro Shop anywhere in the country, it's a tourist mecca. Just, it's unbelievable. I'm going to tell you, you will be totally entertained. If you're half interested in the outdoors, you should go into Bass Pro Shops. I guarantee, and they have a fantastic clothing section. Some of the coolest clothes, anytime. So that's Bass Pro Shops, Clarksville, Indiana, very close to Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It also has where you can order our new book, Alphabet Swamp, and you can go to that. We have a PayPal account, or if you want to contribute to wildlife education or wild animal rescue, just go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. And also, thanks to Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes. They cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. It's huge. Been there. Known for world-class fishing, holds 7 state records in South Carolina and 1 world record. Here's the website, SanteeCooperCountry.org, or give the girls a call. They'll plan your next fishing adventure, get you guides, rooms, everything. 1-800-227-8510. And as we had mentioned moments ago before we went into the break, tonight the show is taking a little different twist. Dr. Henry Day will be interviewing yours truly. So far as questions have been.
It's questionable.
They've been questionable.
When I was a kid growing up, I carried home every animal that I could possibly get my hands on, snakes, frogs, you name it, whatever, I brought it home. Now, were you like that when you were a kid? Is that how you became an animal person, or how'd that
happen? Absolutely. In fact, I was lucky enough. I was raised on the west side of Indianapolis. And at that time, now it's all shopping malls and shopping malls and highways and more shopping malls and strip malls. But at that time, it was creeks and woods and fields, and it was awesome. And I was always trying to figure out, why in the heck do you go catch a bucket full of crawdads? Because we catch all these crayfish out of the creek. And then what do you do with them? But anyway, it was lots of fun. I loved it. In fact, that was my first experiences with snakes. In fact, I have a friend, he listens to the program from California. He was a neighbor when I was growing up in the west side of Indianapolis, a little community that we called Eagledale. Andrew Vollmer, he was a friend of mine, well, still is, and we kept chameleons. That was kind of our hobby, so we would do that. And I wasn't allowed to bring any snakes home because my mom is so afraid. She hates snakes, and I would have to find a place to live if I brought home a snake. So I wasn't allowed to do that.
Well, when did you decide to become a wildlife educator? How'd that happen?
Oh, that's real involved. Well, I got an extreme. Of course, I had a little experience doing that when I was employed at a pet shop. They have a little local kids show here in Indianapolis. It was called Kindergarten College, and so happens that the gal that owned the pet shop I worked at, she would do it. When they'd go on vacation, she'd ask me to do it. So at that time, I think I took on a rhesus monkey, a caiman. It was cool, you know, it's kind of neat. Then I went on to work for an animal supplier, and at that time, I wish I was really into the education part of it because he had some spectacular animals, animals that now you couldn't even bring into the country, and I had a chance to have a lot of hands-on time with, and I still cherish those years I was in Bloomington. But I kind of got away from it for a while. Then I, all of a sudden, I don't know, I got this strange bug. I got a tremendous fascination with reptiles, and I started collecting reptiles. I think at one time I had over 50 species of poisonous snakes, and pythons, boas, monitor lizards, came, and I just lived in an apartment. I mean, nowadays you wouldn't be able to do that. So I came up with the idea of putting together an exhibit, a reptile display, and we'd build a trailer, and then we'd haul it, you know, to fairs and whatever. So I was able to get into a shopping mall, and a gentleman walked up, and he said, he was quite impressed with the trailer. He said, hey, that's pretty good. He said, I do lectures, and I'll tell you what, I can book this trailer in shopping malls in New York. I'll do that if you'll be my assistant with my lectures, my animal lectures. So we ended up going right away. He had a three-week trip planned to Rochester and Syracuse and Fayetteville, New York, and we helped him with the animals. We had a little lion cub with us and an alligator, I think, and he lectured with a chinchilla. And it was just, to tell you the truth, it was kind of pathetic. And I'm listening to this him lecture. I'm thinking, this could be a whole lot better. This could be a whole lot better. So after I hung around for about a year, I decided I wanted to go off on my own and do it. And I really, it's paid. It's now 31 years later. I still love doing it. The kids are just fantastic, and it's pretty cool to see a kid's reaction when they see some of these wild animals we've taken around over the last 30 years.
And I know over the years you've had a lot of beautiful exotic animals. Just from Tibetan yaks to servals, caracals, just unbelievable.
Well, you know, I feel very lucky. We had a chance to meet several years ago Jim Fowler. He was in Indiana. He was doing a speaking engagement up in South Bend, Indiana. And a lot of people don't realize that when Jim would do the Carson Show and the Mike Douglas Show and Merv Griffin and, Oprah, we've been on Oprah with him. They'd ask him to come and be on the show, but they'd always say, bring your animals. Jim doesn't have any animals. So he just knows guys from different parts of the country that are willing to take their animals that are used to being handled and used to being in TV studios and take them to crazy places like L.A. or New York City to do these shows, and we did that. I wish I would have written it down. I think we went out and did the Carson Show like four or five times. We took on a Celebes Black Ape, which has been on the Best of Carson DVDs for like ever, Doc.
Punched Johnny,
though he punched Carson in the mouth. In fact, I know it's on YouTube, the segment, for sure. Just YouTube Carson Celebes 8. Also, badgers. We had a baby baboon, a male baby baboon, and big marine toads from South America. But the crazy thing about doing that, we're kind of shifting here a little bit, when we did the Carson shows, he never looked at the animals before they would go on. So that's the reason he was so spontaneous. And even now, when you watch guys present animals on Letterman or Leno, you know, they're really not very good. I mean, I still say Jim was the best, and all the others have been trying to copy him and haven't even been very successful, you know. I think the top of the tree of that, or the top of the mountain on that pile of whatever is Jack Hanna, too.
Yeah. Well, I'll hover here safely above in a helicopter while Jim wrestles the giant anaconda in the swamp.
Oh, yeah. All those shows are, you know. Go ahead.
The Doc segment on Johnny is still one of the classics. And I remember you took Doc out there to do the show one night, and Diane Cannon took too long.
Yep.
And I'm still mad at her for that. Doc didn't get
too
to be on him. Doc was one of my favorite buddies.
Oh, I was so psyched up. I was getting ready to do the Carson show and take one of my animals that I had raised, and this was going to be just too cool. And, you know, and at that time, we didn't have 50 minutes. A lot of people watched late-night television. They watched Johnny Carson, so it was a really big deal. And, oh, Diane Cannon, that actress, the old hag, she came backstage and saw all these animals that Jim had for that evening, and she said, don't you be cutting my segment. Oh, she got hot. She got real hot. And so they only let him take on like three animals. And we didn't get to Doc. And I'll tell you what, my world had exploded, man. all that trip to California. And you know what was bad? Going back, we'd fly out in those days excess baggage, like when you'd fly your puppy. Well, nowadays that's all changed. Exotics, you have to send them air freight, and it's a big hassle. In fact, I don't even put animals on airplanes anymore because it's so bad. But so we got a chance that we went out, we flew out excess baggage. So when we're going home, and I didn't get on the Carson show, so I was bummed about that. Next day I got to fly back to Indianapolis and hear what we're showing and all that stuff. So needless to say, so they dropped me off at the airport, and we're thinking it's all go. So we get the Celebes Black Ape checked in, and I get all my luggage and stuff checked in. And about 10 minutes before the plane is getting ready to take off, I get paged to come to the ticket counter. Well, this guy proceeds to tell me, he says, well, sir, he says, that monkey, that's not an excess baggage animal. That animal has to be shipped air freight. And he said, and I said, well, sir, I shipped it here from Indianapolis, excess baggage. And what's the difference? He says, you'll have to talk to him in Indianapolis. I said, but I'm in Los Angeles. So I was hot. I said, get him, get him. And I said, I want my luggage too. I was hot. So I didn't know what to do because those guys had dropped me off. I was staying at the Hyatt on Sunset. And here I was with this Celebes ape. And the only thing I could think to do is go back to the hotel. Maybe I could catch up with them because they weren't going to fly out to the next day. But they had a plan. They were going to go to Knox Berry for them all day. So I got in this taxi cab with this big crate. And I'll tell you what, it's the scariest ride I ever had through Los Angeles back to the hotel. And I didn't have any money on me, so I couldn't get a room because, heck, the rooms were like $150 a night. So what I sat out in the parking lot and waited for somebody with that group to come back while that monkey basically bounced his crate all around. And it was like 3 or 4 hour wait. It was bad. And then when we got in, finally I shipped him air freight the next day. So we're walking into the freight office to pick him up, and we look at his crate, and the front of his crate's caved in. It looked like somebody hit the front of his crate with a forklift. So we see that. We start walking toward the crate, and one of those airline guys, I'm not even going to tell you what airline it was because I don't want to. He says, sir, you'll have to wait on the other side of the yellow line. Well, we didn't even hear him. We just kept walking. And that Celebes ape, he just basically touched the front of that crate. It was off. He was out. He ran right to us. And what was bad is we looked in the bottom of his crate, and somebody had been feeding him M&Ms and candy, so I wrote him a check for the air freight, but as soon as I got back to our office, I called the bank and had it stopped. And they tried to send me nasty letters, so I finally turned it to an attorney, and we discussed it. And they said, amazingly, my fee was taken care of.
That's an awful story for Doc to have to go through all that.
It's hard. I mean, shipping animals. Heck, I had a baboon. We was doing Carson one time, and what was it? Maybe it wasn't. We were in Los Angeles, and my flight went via Chicago. And you know, this baboon was a big, fairly large baboon. It was in a big crate. Of course, it had the right stickers, you know, whatever Indianapolis is. I can't recall offhand. So how could an air freight mover confuse that? I mean, it's not like it's one little suitcase that they accidentally put on the wrong conveyor belt. This is a crate with a baboon in it, with on each side it says where it's going. So we get into Indianapolis via Chicago, and I go to the air freight office, and they don't have a baboon. So I ask the guy, and he starts calling. He says, oops. He says, it's in Dallas. I said, what? He says, it'll be in the morning. I was not very happy.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay, now, a lot of people don't know that you're a movie star.
That may be the funniest thing you've said all the stars you've been on.
Well, you were in weren't you in a movie with Bill Shirk?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you were. That's right. The Escapist.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a lot to say about that. Except the movie was so bad, I'm the one that got the best reviews. That's how bad the movie was. So if that tells you anything.
still a classic, though. It's a must-see.
Well, if you're from central Indiana, because they use a lot of the local TV and radio people, you know, it brings back memories. We had a couple good scenes in it. We had, it was primarily what it was about was supposedly this escape artist's life, but it was not anywhere close to it. It was pretty, I wrote my own lines. It wasn't written that great, but anyway. So one of the scenes that we had to do was this magician had a pet cobra, and the director comes up to me and he says, here's how we want to shoot this scene. He says, I want the cobra to sit on that chair. Says, we want to raise up in it in a hood and then kind of take a couple strikes, then exit stage right. That's what we'd like the snake. That's what we'd like the snake to do. So I said, I was young and dumb. I said, okay, that's not a problem. So the crew was from Hollywood, and they were pretty good guys, and they'd actually built a wall between the cameras and where the snake was going to be, because in movies everything's shot close. I mean, the camera's like on top of you, and that's so. But we did it. I think we did it in the first or second take, once I figured out how to make the snake think it was its idea to do that, it went perfect. It wasn't really a hard scene to shoot. Only hard part about it is you had to handle a live cobra that if it bit you, you might die. But besides that, it was a pretty easy scene, I thought. But, every once in a while, I'll have a weak moment. We'll pop in that DVD, and I'll get about halfway through it. I got to go and Earl.
you're still good friends with Bill Shirk today. In fact, you do a radio program for him.
Oh, he's been on. In fact, I'm on his station, Radio Mom, every Sunday. I do the 70s on Sunday from 12 to 7. So radiomom.fm, you can do an internet simulcast listen in. So it's a lot of fun for me to do that. Plus, he's a big contributor to wildlife education and wildlife rescue.
Yeah, and a lot of people that probably don't know, that's Bill Shirk's voice that does the intro to the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he does the intro to the program, and he's great. He's a machine, boy. He used to do those drag racing commercials. You've heard how those are ripped off, boy. He'd do a dozen of them in an afternoon. It was incredible.
Now, you've also done over 100 cable shows for The Amazing World of Animals, right?
Well, we did. We did the Access show. You know, a lot of people around the country are familiar with that. You basically go into a studio and they provide the cameras and they'll give you a short class on how to run all the equipment. You produce your own little TV show. We did 100 shows, I think. We had some cool guests on. We had Sherman Minton, one of the foremost herpetologists, reptile experts in the world. Lots of live animals, man. I'll tell you, I know there's moments in there that are probably still pretty funny, and there's moments that I look away from the screen and go, oh, don't say that. Oh, you didn't say that, did you? Oh, my God. Look, why did you wear that day? Look at your hair. Oh, my Lord. So, but there's nobody that's on television that doesn't have those emotions. So, but that was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
I have all the copies in my trailer back there, but I think they've gotten hot and cold too many times. It'd be fun to dub them on DVD someday.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do that.
Some of those shows are classics.
Yes, sir.
You're also a musician. You play the piano and the violin.
That's what my neighbors complain about. They've started to sign a petition. You know, there's the old story. One time we had the heat go out in the reptile building. We had to bring all the snakes into one of our back bedrooms. And I'd go in there, and there, I don't know, there's probably half a dozen rattlesnakes in there. And I found out for some reason that when I'd go in there and play the violin, there's certain tones that would make those rattlesnakes rattle. And my wife, Cheryl, she didn't think that was humorous. She didn't think it was noteworthy information to have. And she would just simply say to me, Larry, come out of that room. She was rather terrified of the deadly pit vipers that were in there. But, yeah, that was. I do play music, and I draw flies.
Now, you mentioned Cher. Now,
yeah.
That's got to be one of the bravest women in the United States to live with you.
Well, that she is. I'm tell you right now, we should do this, and I'll say this right now. I haven't asked her yet because if it goes bad, but she would be great to have on the show, interview. The problem is she'd say things about me I really don't want the American public or the world to know about. So, but we should do that one time. You know, I've called her, and I think she's rather proud of it in some way. See, bipedal wolverine, and I've actually seen her in cages with cougars and lions and backing them down with a look and a point and a finger. And
I've seen that look before.
Oh, it's not good. I've had that look at me too, yeah, and the nature's beasts know that look very well, so they back off. But she's a trip. Love her very much. She does help me. She travels. She's the main animal handler, you know. I just sit there and tell the children what about the animals, and she's the one that brings them in and out with into the truck, into the school. So she does a fantastic job.
And she's also a well-known book writer.
She is a well-known book writer. She has two books under her belt, Baxter the Educator, which was our first book, and now our brand new one called Alphabet Swamp. I should say Baxter the Educator's Alphabet Swamp. First one's about rescuing alligators in Indiana and how it's irresponsible to let them go in a river or lake. And we have several alligators that people have done just that, that we've rescued from various rivers or lakes. So she came up with the idea about a book, and she named it, we called it Baxter after her uncle in South Carolina. And I came up with the idea, I think, on educator, because, you know, teachers are educators, and we look at our animals as teachers. So I thought, man, that's really clever, educator. So we have that book, and then our new one, Alphabet Swamp. As I mentioned earlier, folks can go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and you can order a copy of that. Henry?
Yes, sir? Well,
did you run out of questions?
Well, let me think. I got plenty of questions, but most of them I can't ask you. But,
the idea is to keep this moving along.
This is called dead how many
care.
Kids? I know we talked about this once before, but
yeah.
How many kids do you see in a year, average, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Probably 70, 80, 90, 100,000 probably, maybe. Yeah, I tried to figure that out one time, and it just gave me a headache. But, you know, in the old days, we'd do four shows a day. Now I don't do four. It's just the traveling and everything. But we'd do four shows a day, 400 or 500. I think over one time I figured I've lectured over, 8,000 schools probably, maybe.
Unbelievable.
I feel like it right now. No, it's a blast. It's a great job. Couldn't imagine doing anything else. Well, you're a pretty good interviewer, Henry.
Well, now that the school season's over, what do you do to the summer during the summer to make
well, we just got back doing those activities with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, working on this show, and just figuring out ways to raise money and plan next year's schedule. That's what's ahead for me now. It's very exciting.
And that school starts up here next month, doesn't it?
We usually start about middle of September. You got to get them back to school and under control. Henry, you've done a great job. Before we have to go out, I want to remind everybody, next week on the show, Jim Willis with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, he just got back from the Gulf. He's going to tell us all the inside stuff, good positive stuff going on down there in Louisiana. Jim Willis from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The 22nd, the week after, he's coming. He's going to be on, I promise. Rupert from Survivor, he'll be on. And then on the 29th, Jay Slack with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. What a great time. We'd like to thank Eric Altman for all of his expertise on producing this program and monitoring the chat room and the phones. I'd like to thank Dr. Henry Day. Good job, Henry.
Well, thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, you did good. And we'll be back next week. Remember, Jim Willis with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This is Larry Batson. We're with Wildlife Educational Services Incorporated. And this is Blog Talk Radio, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.